Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's a great pleasure to welcome back to the program Mike Regan, who's co-founder and chief of relationship development at Transact Technologies. And today we're going to talk about leading through the five stages of grief in supply chain management. I'm going to explain what that is in just a moment here. But certainly, we're kind of near the end of 2025, and all year, companies have been dealing with numerous challenges, right? We've got cost pressures, regulatory changes, the never-ending tariffs, geopolitical uncertainty. And when you look ahead to 2026, the outlook is more of the same. That is more continued change and continued uncertainty. And the simple truth is that the quote-unquote the way things were isn't coming back. So in this episode, we're going to look at the current industry trends through a unique and relevant lens, and that is the Kubler-Ross framework, right? The five stages of grief. You got denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then ultimately acceptance. And the idea for this episode, Mike has given a lot of talks, and he was talking about this framework when he's been out there talking about the impact that the tariffs are having on supply chain and transportation operations, and just about all all these high level supply chain challenges. And I thought it was kind of a creative or a different kind of lens to look at this. So that became kind of the catalyst for having him, come in the program. And if you've heard Mike speak before, maybe on his 2-minute warning videos or on previous episodes of Talking Logistics, you know that he has a unique way of, cutting through the noise and getting, to the heart of what's really happening in transportation and supply chain management. So it's always a pleasure to have him on the program. And with that, Mike, welcome back.
Adrian, I'm thrilled and delighted to be with you. A lot of stuff going on. I'm looking forward to the conversation. We're living in a sea of uncertainty and all sorts of wonderful things. Like the what's that Chinese wish purportedly, may you live in interesting times? We're living in interesting times. I don't know any other way to say it, Adrian.
Yeah, well, certainly, very interesting times. But maybe before we kind of dive into this Kubler-Ross framework, I was looking at the calendar, and it was almost exactly a year ago that you were, on the program. Like you said, a lot has happened in just the past 12 months. You talk to a lot of executives, you go to a lot of conferences, you're a keynote speaker in a lot of places. So not only do you get to interact with your clients there at Transact, but you get to interact with many in the industry. As we're heading into 2026, I mean, what is top of mind for executives today?
Well, that's a great question, and I think you touched on it at the very beginning, the level of uncertainty. Most of the people, I'm involved in various organizations of presidents and CEOs, chaired a network, for example, with about over 4,000 manufacturers and things like that. One of the things we want to know is, A, what game are we playing? B, what are the rules of the game? And C, how do I do well in this game? And now, when I don't know what game I'm playing, I don't know what the rules are, and I'm not even sure what a success look like, I do this individually, and I think you and others leading companies do it as well. You tend to become conservative in pulling your horns. You keep your powder dry until you can figure out, okay, this is the path forward. There's an old saying, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And I think right now, I think you mentioned you've got cost issue, geopolitical, tariffs, enough stuff is stirring the mix. And one of the things that we do, Adrian, love to talk to people like you, but we interview economists like Gary Schilling, and we interview a bunch of people. Walter Kimsis, for example, is on our supply chain huddles. He's a great economist as well. And I can show you chart after chart. Business investment is plunged. In the trucking industry, there's all sorts of things going on that create uncertainty. And so that, I think, is top of mind. How do we get out of that? How do we get to a level, stable playing field? I love the water, and I've been on the water when the waves gotten real rough, and you're like, when can we get through this? And then, I went to Antarctica. I went through the Drake Passage, And they called it the Drake Lake because the swells were only 6 to 8 feet at that time. But we did have a night where the swells were estimated to be between 20 to 30 feet. And we were saying 20 to 30 feet, 6 to 8 feet looks good. And I think that's kind of the mindset that some of the people running organizations are taking a look at today. If we can get out of the 20 to 30 foot waves, we can deal with the 6 to 8 feet waves. The swell's a lot easier.
Yeah, and I hear much of the same thing as well. And you talked about water, and I know this is something else that you've talked about too, which is there's always been uncertainty in supply chain management, and there's always been change in supply chain management. But I think compounding the uncertainty is something else that you've talked about in the past is the kind of the iceberg of ignorance, right? Where there's uncertainty, and then there's like you don't know what you don't know, or at least a lot of the people that are making the decisions may not even have the full picture of what's going on, right?
Exactly correct. That iceberg of ignorance that we started talking about 8, 9 years ago was pioneered by a Japanese business consultant, and it says at the top, the C-level executives, they're only aware of 4% of the issues that are confronting the people down on the line, the things that are actually impacting your performance with your customers, your capability to work with suppliers. Below the C-level, Adrian, if I get down to the VP and director level, they're aware of something like 8 to 10%. And the percentages, I might be off by a point here too, but general idea. Then the people in the middle, the managers, are probably aware about 30%. But the people actually out in the field, the people on the line, they're aware of the problem at like 100% because they're the ones who are impacted by those problems. It's, customers not getting what they want because of issues with fill rates. It's stuff from suppliers, not getting stuff from suppliers because of various issues. And so when you break that down, it creates a very compelling framework to assess how, where do I stand as the leader of the organization. I've been very active in an organization. I mentioned the Young President's Organization, and I love talking with YPOers. It's the preeminent worldwide organization, 35,000 plus CEOs and presidents and all. And one of my buddies that I have an enormous amount of respect to, an East Coast guy like you, who lives in Rhode Island, Carl. Carl is a really good at understanding problems throughout the organization. He does that by seeking input. He doesn't sit in his office waiting for the problems to bubble up. He's out there talking to people. And I think when we eventually get into the what's going on in the supply chain, I think one of the great challenges for leaders is to do a little bit more of a deep dive about what's really going on in my supply chain, because your supply chain literally touches most areas of your company. And typically, believe it or not, Adrian, you've done a tremendous amount of research on this. It can be 12 to 15 to 20% of your sales dollars are being allocated to supply chain related activities.
Right. And I think that the recognition that wasn't recognized, not that long ago, is that, transportation, logistics, supply chain doesn't just impact the bottom line, the cost side of the balance sheet and the P&L, but it also impacts the top line, right? It limits your top, if you don't have strong and capable supply chain processes, logistics processes, it impacts top line growth. It impacts market share. It impacts customer satisfaction. A lot of these things beyond growth. And I think just building on what you said, certainly, we always talk about the silos between the different functional groups, but then to your point, building on this iceberg framework, it's we got to break down the silos and the levels of communication, understanding between those that are in the front lines, to your point, that really have the fullest understanding of what's happening day in, day out, and the C-level, right, that may have may not be as fully aware of what's truly happening within their organizations. And maybe that's what's leading to get into now into the five stages here, which is the denial, right? And many companies still seem one, I still come across some companies that kind of seem to be believe that these disruptions, these changes, this too shall pass, right? That temporary. And I mean, from your perspective, I mean, where do you see kind of quote unquote denial, showing up in how shippers approach transportation, logistics, and supply chain operations? And ultimately, what's the cost of staying in this stage?
Well, the cost, let's go from the back to the front. The cost is you put your business at risk. You are literally putting your business at risk. Okay, because the cost of denial is felt not just on the bottom line, but in areas of the balance sheet as well. You know, one of the things that we give a talk on that we're really excited about because I've been talking about it for years is your supply chain an asset or a liability? You know, I'm a CPA, worked for Pricewaterhouse. I can tell your folks, if you get nothing else out of this interview other than the definition of an auditor, which is somebody who walks around and stabs the wounded after the war is over, the interview will have been worthwhile. But the reality of it is, you know, so we take a look at the cost and then let's move back up. You know, it puts your business out at risk because when we're in denial, and I like to remind people, denial just ain't a river in Egypt. Denial is unconscious, conscious, whatever you want to call it, willingness to ignore facts. Choose to ignore the facts because to deal with the facts might lead to things, to having to deal with things that you don't want to deal with. You know, and I put this in the context of health issues. You know, if you are feeling something and you don't do anything about it, perchance it might pass like people in denial. But by and large, what really happens is if you ignore it, it only gets worse. And, you know, having had numerous health opportunities to grow and develop in my life, I want to attack it early and deal with it so that I can be on with the rest of my life and do talking logistics interviews for the next 30 years with you. You know, that's kind of an important fact. So the denial is an intentional or unintentional willingness to ignore what's really going on. And along that line, you know, I've given these talks to, you know, during COVID especially, probably to 3,000 to 4,000 CEOs and presidents and CFOs and COOs. And one of the things I asked them to do, Adrian, is to rank their supply on the supply chain spectrum. One is third world countries like Somalia have supply chains that are better than mine. Five is I've got a world-class supply chain. No one, you know, does better. Interestingly enough, Adrian, you know, as part of my talk, I say, stand up if your supply chain's important. Everyone stands up. And then I say, okay, well, here's the spectrum. You can stay standing if your supply chain is three or above. Three, I'm just asking. If your supply chain is good, above average, or excellent, you get to stay standing. 90% of the audience sits down. So, despite you telling me that my supply chain is really, really important, you're acknowledging that we have a supply chain that's mediocre to below average. And denial says, I don't have to do anything about that. But one of the things I had the privilege of doing in 2022, when I chaired this network within YPO, was to interview Jeff Wilke, who was the number two guy at Amazon and would have replaced Jeff Bezos had he not retired 30 days before Jeff. And he said, you know, the secret, I asked him, where does Amazon rank on the supply chain spectrum? And he said, well, he says, you know, I don't want to say, you know, brag, but we're above four for sure, you know, four and a half. And he said, here was the secret of Amazon's success. Amazon said, we're going to use our supply chain to create capabilities and customer expectations that our competitors will not be able to match within the same cost framework as us. So we win. So he talked about at Amazon, the supply chain by design was viewed as an asset through which they would beat their competitors. I think they did a pretty good job, you
Oh,
know, and
absolutely, yeah.
you know, you get 400-foot yachts when you use your supply chain as an asset, and you get expensive weddings in Italy, you
That's right. Yeah, be in the you know be the one that everyone is chasing after, basically. But I love that, right? I love that question. Is your supply chain an asset or a liability? You know, I think that you know those companies that look at it as an asset, look at it as a competitive differentiator, and not simply as kind of in, you know, I've been at this now for 26 years myself. You know, in the early days, I remember going to, you know, everyone complained. It's just everyone just looks at it as a cost center, right? And not really taking a strategic, you know, view of it. You know, I'm wondering if the denial aspect of it is really a symptom of what we were just talking about before, which is they're in denial because, particularly if you're in the C-suite, because you really don't understand. You don't have visibility or understanding to what's really happening out there. Do you agree with that?
Oh, Adrian, absolutely. Absolutely. My wife and I'll just leave her out of it because she'll get mad at me. Jean and I have been married 47 years, and so she, but we're both take pride in our health. Not like you. I mean, you're a world-class cyclist, but we decided several years ago that we needed to lose weight. And part of that was prompted by a buddy of mine who told me I was in denial over my desire to lose weight. And was a part of a Bible study group, and he told me, he said, "Please stop telling me you want to lose weight." And I want to lose weight. He said, No. You're not doing anything that a person that was serious about losing weight would be doing. Okay, you missed dessert here. You're still not eating the way you need to do. So you worked out two, three times a week. That's not what you do if you want to lose weight. There are things that you do if you're serious about it. And so, candidly, we've been in business for 41 years, Adrian, and we have access to experts like you. We can walk into an organization and within a day or two get a pretty good assessment of where you're at with your supply chain. And so once I in denial, it says, well, I have a mediocre supply chain, but it's really not that bad for my business. And I tell everybody, as long as your other competitors have supply chains that stink, you're okay. If this is the bar here and you're at that bar, okay. But if you have a company that I call it in my speeches that goes Amazon on you and raises the bar, you have a problem. And you cannot fix that problem within a month, 2 months. It's part of a year-long commitment that says we're going to be intentional by design in building a stronger supply chain. And I will tell you the thing that COVID exposed was just how poor the state of supply chains were for a lot of shippers. And can I be excruciatingly blunt? As you sometimes have encouraged me to be, the tariffs are doing the same thing. I have people tell me how important tariffs are, how it's affecting their company. Fewer than 10% of the people we've talked to, and we've talked to a couple hundred, have a written tariff management plan that says, here's how we're going to manage it. And I tell everybody, if you don't have a plan, you're winging it. And if you're winging it, you could be doing that as a byproduct of the anger. What the hell? We got to do it, because it's going to be here. And, we got to attack this. And then you're going to bargain. Well, if I do this, maybe that won't happen. If I do this, maybe the customer will be happy. If I do it, and that's not the way the process works. That's not the way the process works. And you've done, through your Indago, you've done a wealth of research. Am I on the mark with that, do you think?
No, I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, we've actually done some research, related to that in terms of, how prepared our companies. For example, even we did a survey just last week, or earlier this month, looking at the Supreme Court case, and that took place, the hearing that took place on the Trump tariffs. And, we asked the question if for some reason, that the case can go either way, but if the tariffs get overturned, how prepared, what actions do you plan to take? And how prepared are you, for example, to file for refunds if that's something you want to do? And, a relatively large percent of the companies that responded said, yeah, we will probably seek refunds, but we really don't have kind of don't really know how to do that or what the process, would be. And, certainly, so in some ways it kind of gonna wing it or do it on the fly based on, how the court outcome, the outcome of the case is. But I think, you're right. I mean, I think, and I love this kind of theory of relativity that you brought up before, right? Like, yeah, if we're performing at the same level as everybody else, then, there's no problem, right? But if every, so if everyone's mediocre, then everybody's mediocre, right? But sooner or later, someone's gonna be tired of being mediocre, to your point. And
Amen. Amen.
they're gonna do what it takes to what Amazon did, right? And others to say, you know what, we want to be better. We want to leverage our supply chain as an asset, not a liability. We want to be more strategic. And then you're in trouble, right? Or then you're playing catch up, with the competition. So we have the other stages, right? I think you touched upon it here. You've got the anger and the bargaining and the depression. But ultimately, we you know you. the goal is to get get to acceptance, right? If acceptance means kind of acknowledging reality, right? Acknowledging that, hey, the way things were are not going to come back, and this is kind of the operating environment that we really are in, and we need to move forward with purpose. I mean, what does acceptance look like in supply chain management right now? And what actions ultimately are going to separate companies that are adapting and thriving? What's going to separate those companies from those that are going to be stuck in the earlier stages, that are still going to be in denial, that's still going to be in the anger or bargaining or depression state?
Whew, that's a great question, Adrian. I'll try to briefly unpack it to the best of my ability. A couple of things. Acceptance means I have a plan. I have a plan, and it's a written plan. And it's a written plan that's basically said, we're going to look across silos, and we're going to take a look at how my supply chain is touching the sales process, how it's touching the procurement process. What do I need out of my ERP, my SAP, Oracle, JDE, go on, blah, blah, blah. What do I need there to do this? Now I come back through, and how does it impact the finance? My favorite companies are the ones that think that, well, we're going to ask our suppliers to take 120 days. You talk about people that are unenlightened. We have dissuaded numerous shippers from doing that. Because as my buddy Rob Estes likes to say, there's nothing in the Estes freight name that suggests we're a bank. And we can figure out the cost of capital just as well as you can. And it's we're financing, it's going to be a lot higher than your internal cost of capital, putting on my CPA hat. So acceptance means, first of all, let's start with the plan. Give you a perfect illustration. Right now, no one knows the exact amount, but there's estimated to be somewhere in the $300 billion collection thing. All right. And I think part of the president's plan about saying giving the tariff money back to people is to put pressure on the Supreme Court and others to say, if you overturn the decision, and by the way, I'm very proud, the guy who brought that suit is somebody I know here from Chicago. He's a YPOer, and he's a wonderful guy. He didn't sit back and say, oh man, what? He said, no, we're going to go because they're wrong. These IEEPA tariff issues, wrong. But now, if you're going to have a refund, there's things that you ought to be doing right now. Your paperwork and documentation had better be like really good, and you better be able to pull the trigger in a hurry. Because what happened with COVID, when everyone made the mad dash to the bank, to get your COVID relief funds, the people that went first got the best results. And so this government, how are you going to return $400 billion, $500 billion? That plan says we need to be doing this now. And then when you're in acceptance mode and you have a plan, you're being proactive. I've considered multiple scenarios. First of all, I've accepted that the conditions we're experiencing aren't temporary. I've delineated by the stuff that the storm's going to blow over. And then I've delineated the stuff that's going to cause damage, the hurricane. Here's what my relief efforts look like if it's a hurricane. Acceptance means that everyone is aware that there are certain things you can't control. One of the things that to this day blows me away is I used my weight example with you. I've talked to CEOs about this. We just did a tariff webcast for presidents and YPOers, and we've done four webcasts with CSEMP, Knit League, and others, and they've been great things. And what just blows me away, a friend of mine, he has about $100 million company. He's getting killed by the tariffs, and it's compounded because his company depends on the importation of raw dirty magnets. What did the Chinese cut out when they went to the export controls? Dirty magnets. Yet he's got a competitor that's trying to do something by going to Mexico and Canada. He has no idea. No one in his company has any idea about Incoterms, the true impact. No one has any idea about the China plus one, China plus two. And here's the thing that is distressing. One phone call, he can get help. Acceptance means I'm going to ask for help. You know, one of the things I love to do, I'm nowhere near your skill set on the presentation side, but one of the things I like to do at a lot of my ends of my presentations is to have people stand up and grab each other's hands and say, "Can you help me?" And people say, "Well, if I, Mike, if I ask for help, they'll know that I'm not qualified. They'll know that, you know, Mike, if I admit that I don't know, you know, I might lose my job." And I like to remind people when they say, "If I don't ask for help, you know, then I can travel under the radar screen." You can't. You cannot travel under the radar screen, because sometime that COO, chief supply chain officer, CFO, they're going to say, "Well, there are people out there that can do this and make our problem disappear like this. Why aren't you? Why am I the one that's bringing it to you? Why aren't you the one bringing it to me?" And when we're in acceptance mode, it's, you know, like I said, game on, but game on in a positive way. Let's take off the mask. Let's stop playing pretend, like pretend this is going to go away. Pretend we can bargain our way out of it by doing temporary measures and get access to people that can basically get us to the other side. And in your supply chain, you know, Adrian, we tell everybody, if you don't mind me bringing this up, you know, right now the prevailing knowledge is that the LTL carriers are taking general rate increases. When I spoke at the Inland Waterway Conference, I said, right now the LTL carrier pricing is irrational and the pricing wall has cracked. That wasn't an attack on the carriers, but what it did indicate is we're getting great results and able to help our customers who already have great rate. We can get rates, LTL rates, to go down, but it requires a different mindset. It requires doing a couple of things that I touched on our 2-minute warning here recently about knowing where your carriers want to haul your freight, knowing what an operating ratio looks like in the carriers, what you're doing that impacts a carrier's cost structure. Looking at what other things, Jeff Musing from Pitt, Ohio at Transact.com, we have this there. And, you know, listening to people like Rob Estes, who I've interviewed, you know, you see the carrier's perspective. And if you do that, you know, you see your rates come down. So one customer came to us and said, "We're projecting 5% increase in the GRI, you know, with the carriers." We did a sourcing project for them and then we lowered their rates by 9%. Now I asked the question to people, you know, is 14% important? And for those that say no, I said, you know, I wish I were you. I wish I could go to bed at night throwing away hundreds of thousands or even a couple of million dollars and not let that affect me. You know, I don't want to say I'm El Cheapo, but I'm like El Mr. Frugality. And you know, if you could save money, Adrian, if you could save money, why wouldn't you want to do that?
Right.
And that's the acceptance phase. I apologize for going on, but you really asked a great question there. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, a lot to unpack there, but I think, you know, a few things kind of struck with me. You know, number one is, you know, obviously, you know, accepting, you know, to the current reality, right? That, you know, the way thing, you know, this is not gonna, you know, just pass by, you know, this too shall pass type of thing. You know, this is the current reality, and we have to respond to it. Secondly, you talked about part of acceptance is putting together a plan or having a plan, right? And obviously that plan is going to be a little bit more dynamic because as things on the ground, you know, the realities on the ground change, you may need to, you know, readjust and so forth. But, you know, you can't go there, you know, by the, you can't address these things by the seat of your pants, right? You have to go in with at least, you know, a plan on how you're going to, you know, address this. I think the third piece was very critical because I think that's a key piece of acceptance is to say, hey, you know, we've got areas that, you know, we don't have either the internal expertise or the internal technology. And certainly that's the case with tariffs right now for a lot of companies. Or I've seen that the case too with LTL, right? Because the LTL is very differently, it's very different than, you know, truckload, is very different than ocean. It's very, you know, the different modes have, you know, their unique you know, characteristics, economic drivers and so forth. But it's being able to pick up the phone and say, you know, we need to tap into some expertise to help us in this area, whether it's tariffs, whether it's navigating the LTL market, whether it's understanding what's happening in ocean or whatever the case might be. So I love that piece of it because I think that is the piece that I think a lot of companies and a lot of individuals, you know, is hard to do, right? Because you almost feel like, to your point, either say, hey, we should know this, or we should do it ourselves, or it's going back to the denial phase, where you think you have the capabilities, you think you have the expertise, but you really don't. You're kind of kidding yourself there, and then that sets you up for for sustained challenges moving forward. So Mike, I mean,
Can I interrupt for a moment?
yeah, go
Can I
ahead.
interrupt?
Yeah, go
You know,
ahead.
because when I'm dealing with the stages of grief, okay, the question that I've asked some senior executives, if I was smooth and had your ambassadorial skills, maybe I wouldn't get into trouble. But I want you to maybe, I'd love your response to this, because some things I've asked to people is how much worse does it have to get before you choose to fix the problem? On my weight journey, how much heavier did I have to get before I said, this too has cannot stand. It has to pass. And that's where, from a supply chain perspective, I think, you've done some great work with Indago and just who you are in your talks. I put it back in the medical terms. If you're a smoker and you have risk of lungs, is the diagnosis, Lord may it never be, is the diagnosis of lung cancer enough to get you to stop smoking?
Yeah,
And
and by that point, unfortunately, it's too late, and I think, unfortunately, I mean, just to build on the health analogy, I mean, for a lot of folks, they have to have, they have a heart attack, right? And they may survive it, they may not. But if they survive it, then that's the wake up call, right? And if they had taken action years ago with exercising more, being more healthy, kind of, eating more healthy food, et cetera, they may never have experienced that, heart attack. And I think that's the case, in supply chain management as well. I mean, we saw it again. We saw it with COVID, right? That was like, the equivalent of a heart attack, and we saw all the limitations and the companies had, and the fragility that companies had in their supply chains as a result of that. And I think we're seeing it in a different sense with, everything going on with tariffs, as well. So I think, unfortunately, I think the companies that, I think part of acceptance and part of positioning yourself for success moving forward is to, you said it before, right? It's to be proactive versus reactive, right? It's to say, hey, asking those what if questions and putting together the plans or the playbooks to respond effectively if and when some of those, things happen. I mean, one of the words that I love that I hear more and more people talking about right now is increasing optionality. And
Oh.
I think that's the key thing for me for success is, how do you increase optionality? I mean, there's some things you can do and there's some things you can't do, but if you're single sourced, right? That's the most classic example, right? And your option is only one, right? Our only option is to get these rare earths from China, right, which is a situation that we in this country and many other countries find themselves in, because they produce, we, I think it's something like 70% of the rare earths come from China and 90% of the refinery comes from there. That's a bad situation to be, right? When your option is one, and it's with a country that, it could be adversarial, you can view as adversarial. And I think you can kind of take that framework across any aspect of your supply chain. So I think unfortunately for many companies, they wait to have a heart attack until they finally wake up and say, we got to
You know
do something
what?
about it.
I hope you don't mind. I'm going to steal that. And the first time I'm going to say, Adrian, my buddy Adrian said, second time I'm going to say, I've heard it said. And by the third time, I'll be able to say, as I've been widely quoted. But, Adrian, there is one thing that I just want to pass this along, because I know you'll be covering it and perhaps the future discussions. There's things coming our way in 2026 that shippers aren't paying attention to. And when Bob Costello, who's a buddy of mine and the chief economist from ATA, gives a presentation at the Knit League Summit about carriers writing off 2026. He said, unless there's a liquidation of supply, we're not going to see an increase in demand. And the dilemma that the carriers are confronting is that their cost of operating continue to go up.
Yep.
And we're seeing potential the 2027 emissions requirement increasing the cost of a truck by as much as 25 to 35,000. We're seeing the impact potentially, though, on the offset to get less capacity, the English Language Proficiency Act, the CDL issue for non-resident aliens. We're seeing the cost of insurance. You know, Werner was very successful, but my wife sits on the board of an insurance company that writes truck policies. Yeah, you're going to be shocked to hear this. Not really, but you know, it's not like there's a lot of insurance companies that are saying, "Wow, we're looking for ways to write more trucking insurance." And you see insurance, you know, carriers going self-insured. And my point then is, from an acceptance phase, you know, you said, "What if?" One of the talks I've given is called "Predictable Surprises," and it's based on a book by Peter Schwartz, or not Peter Schwartz, but two Harvard guys. But in "Predictable Surprises," it says, you know, nine two nine Feb September 11th, 2001, was a predictable event. In 1996, the Gore Commission said to the airlines, "We can spend a $500 million to improve security." And the airline said, you know, what could be the worst that could happen? But there were indications that they could bomb buildings, and that's what happened. So when you're looking at your supply chain in the acceptance phase, is saying, what are the threats? If my cost of containers goes crazy and that type of stuff, you know,
Welcome.
what are the costs to this type of thing? And that I just highlight that for you there.
Yeah, no, I think yeah, that's absolutely right, Mike. And you know, I think
Goodbye.
I think answering, you know, those types of questions and preparing for those types of questions are you know, very, very important. And you know, we covered a lot of ground, you know, today. So I mean, maybe as a way to kind of distill it down and you know, provide the audience with you know, a final nugget. I mean, if you had to say, hey, here's the one thing that I hope people got out of our conversation today, you know, to help them in 2026, what would that be?
Get your plan together. Get your plan. One of my dear friends was on our board for several years as a Hall of Fame linebacker, Mike Singletary, played for the Chicago Bears, Samurai Mike. And he and I talk about this a lot. You know, you'll never find a football team that goes into a game without a game plan. They don't say, "Well, we'll see what the other team does. We'll see what the other side does." And no, they go in and they script the plays that they're going to run. The defense practices what the other team's offense is going to look like. And I just asked this question. If you're not willing to invest the time and the resources to create a written supply chain plan, which, by the way, probably fewer than 25% of the shippers have, don't tell me your supply chain's important. Stop telling me you want to lose weight. Because if you don't want to invest that time, if you don't want to take advantage of great things like the Indago research that you do and that type of stuff, you stop it. Just plain out stop it and say, "I'm willing to accept the outcome associated with having a below average to mediocre supply chain. It's not important enough." And I just say this, Adrian, and not to belabor the point, but you know, I heard a great message once from a pastor that says, you know, when people tell me what's important in their life, I ask them for two things. I ask them for their calendar and their checkbook. Because where people spend their time and where people spend their money is a reflection of what's truly important to them. And so if you don't have a plan, don't tell me that it's important, because just be comfortable and say, look, you know, how many people go into the year? I asked this to CEOs, and I'll let you go at this. You know, how many of you have a business plan? You know, you're going into 2026. Are you going to have, you know, do you have a written business plan? Oh, yeah. Do you have a disaster recovery plan? How many people have written disaster recovery plans? 95, 9. And in the area of cybersecurity, that number, if you don't have a cybersecurity plan, you're crazy. Okay. Go back to jail. Do not pass go. So you have a written business plan, you have a written cybersecurity plan, you probably have a written sales plan because they're quote unquote important. But you don't have a written supply chain plan. So continue to live in the land of denial. Maybe you're going to be, you get over the anger. Maybe you're going to bargain your way out of it. Oh, we'll do this and it'll pass and this, that. And then you can get depressed and say, will it ever end? You want to hear something there? You want to hear something? This blew me away. I was talking with a company, big ass company, and they were talking about the fact their earnings. And they import a lot of stuff from China and all. Those tariffs are going to wipe out 50% of their earnings. And I'm like I said before, how much worse does it have to get before I say, well, maybe there's things I can do to make it only 25% of my earnings. But does that help out, Adrian?
Yeah, I think that that's a perfect way to kind of condense everything we talked about, right? I mean, I think, and I love that analogy. I mean, where do you spend your time and where do you spend your money? And I think one way to kind of frame that within a supply chain or supply chain group is to say, hey, look, if we look over the past year, what percent of our time do we spend being proactive in terms of asking these what if questions, putting together these playbooks and plans, gathering the data that we needed to make data-driven decisions, so on and so forth. And what time did we, how much of our time did we spend firefighting, dealing with all sorts of exceptions, angry customers, angry suppliers, and so forth, because we were fully in reactive mode. And I think if the balance of time is off, right, where if you're spending more than 50% of your time on that reactive piece of it versus the proactive piece of it, then you've got some room for improvement there. So, Mike.
And we haven't covered, by the way, maybe this could be our next conversation in talking logistics here, hopefully sooner than a year from now, is the role that AI is going to play.
That's right. I was about to say, we actually went the entire conversation without mentioning AI, which I think, is probably blasphemous in this day and age, but you did it. You inserted AI in the conversation right at the end here, setting up the stage for our next conversation, which surely has to be before next year. So,
More to come.
more to come. This was the, we could promote this episode as the first AI-free conversation of
Yeah.
2025, perhaps, but which is probably why it's a breath of fresh air. But
Yeah,
Mike,
thank you.
always a pleasure. Like I said at the onset, I love the fact that obviously you've got a wealth of experience, but also a wealth of knowledge from all the different people you talk to and meet with, and so forth. And you tell it like it is. So I appreciate you making the time to be on the program.
Hey, Adrian, listen, anytime. It's always a pleasure and an honor. Hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And anytime you call, I haul. Okay? Thanks so much.
Great. Well, thank you. And I'll be remiss. I'll end on this. I want to thank you again, and Transact for sponsoring our logistics leaders for Type 1 Diabetes Cure Team. I'm wearing the sweatshirt here,
And you got the logo here. You got the logo here.
and I've got the logo here for being our team sponsor.
Yeah, I do it for the swag.
Yes, that's right. But anyway,
Thank
very
you.
meaningful support. Obviously
A
my
great
daughter has
cause.
type 1, and I think some folks with type 1 as well. And again, I really appreciate your support all these years with that cause. Well, with that, if you're watching this episode on demand and you've got a question or a comment for Mike, and you're watching this either at the Transact Technologies website or on Talking Logistics, feel free to reach out to Mike via that way, or you can find him on LinkedIn and all sorts of ways. And I'm sure he'll be more than be happy to respond via that medium. So again, thank you for watching, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.